welcome to Investor Resources with your hosts, Don Creech and Perry Sykes, who both realize that the market doesn't know what keeps you up at night. It doesn't know when you want to retire, and it doesn't know how old you are. The simple truth is, the market doesn't care. But if you care, then you've tuned in at the perfect time. You're listening to Investor Resources, bringing clarity to the confusing world of finance. Here are your hosts of Investor Resources, Don Creech and Perry Sykes.
Well, good afternoon. This is Don Creech.
And this is Perry Sykes. Welcome to the show, everyone.
So you are listening to live call-in radio right here on 770 KTTH. You want to talk to us today about your portfolio, some recommendation that your friendly local financial advisor has made to you, you can give us a call here at 800-465-8770. Well, this morning we wrapped up our November stock market update webinar.
Indeed we did.
And we have one scheduled for December 4th. Now, you cannot register for that just yet, but later on this weekend, you'll be able to when we get the website updated.
Maybe even later today, yes.
Okay, well, good. Depends on how long your honeydew list is when you get home.
This is true. Got to remember anyway, who's in charge there.
Yeah. That's right. We do have a week in review. We'll put that out first of the week, and there'll be a link in there to register for December. If you're not getting the week in review, send us an email, help@iriradio.com. Put week in review in the subject line. We need your first and last name to set you up in constant contact. We'll already have your email since you're emailing us. And if for some reason you joined the very small minority of people who say this isn't worthwhile, it's real easy to disconnect from Week in Review, but that does not happen very often. It is amazing to any of our consultants at how seldom anybody opts out of Week in Review. So it must have some good information in it.
People do anyway, enjoy it, yep.
We've had an interesting week. We had an interesting batch of material that we learned this last week and we shared today on the webinar. But one of the things that has really changed is something that we have suspected, we collectively, not just Perry and me, but all sorts of us. When we look at the government and we ask the question, how come somebody who is so broke and in such need of donations to get to Congress comes back so wealthy?
Seems to happen over and over, doesn't it? It's like you get elected, you get rich. It's funny how that works out.
Well, it helps apparently to be appointed to the Fed also. Over the last couple of weeks, we've mentioned that several of the Fed presidents and the regional banks had retired after it was disclosed they were doing what politicians are called and corporate officers are called doing insider trading. They're trading on their own accounts just before they announce Federal Reserve policy decisions. Do you think there's a link?
It's startling that can occur legally right now. It's like they're not breaking the law, but that can't be ethical. It just can't be.
It did raise some questions. Yeah. Now, when Chairman Powell released a trade, I mean, it wasn't quite as bad because he was trading in the S&P 500 index ETF. The ticker is SPY. So it wasn't like he knew something about a decision that was going to happen at a company level, but he still had a pretty good idea what should be happening in the market since it responds to his every spoken word.
And it was a sizable trade. Yeah, he moved some money around. Yeah,
it was big money. In any event, there are at least proposals that all of this kind of stuff is going to be set aside as no-no behavior going forward. The question is always, now that it's on the light's been shining on it, and there's a proposal out, will it actually get done before people forget about it? Mm. If people forget about it, then, oh yeah, that's sitting on the back burner. We just haven't gotten it done yet. Until we actually get some legislation to prohibit it, my guess is it's not going to change anything long term.
they're not going to be in a hurry unless somebody holds their feet to the fire. And, you know, like you said, Don, it's happening at the Fed. It happens in Congress. They shouldn't be profiting on the level of inside information that they have. That shouldn't be, in my humble opinion, legal for them to be trading like that. But right now they can.
Well, it's the same with Congress. And all we have to do is get Congress to vote to restrict themselves from doing what lines their own pocket.
Right. It sounds much harder when you see it that way, Don. It's like, that's going to be a long road. Yeah, okay.
I think so.
Yeah.
That's going to be tough. Hey. Well, you know, the market works around storylines. We use stories to try and explain things we have a hard time understanding, like math, economics. So it's easier to figure out a story to explain a model and say, well, this is the way things are supposed to work. Now, they don't always go that way. And in fact, we talked about one of those today, which is a foundational financial model in the entire industry, modern portfolio theory, which we've talked about a lot on our show for years. It is a theory that is not actually proven to generate wealth for the people who buy into it.
Correct.
The people who sell it make out pretty well. But the poor retail investor who believes that the advisor sitting on the other side of the table that says, well, now that you've answered these questions, it looks like the appropriate portfolio for you will be so much in stocks and so much in bonds because, well, but by the way, you're getting older, so maybe we should put more in bonds. Totally ignoring the fact that the Fed has announced it is going to raise interest rates, which damages bonds. So the older you get, the more you should put into bonds in an asset class that is expected to lose money as long as we have inflation, which may be a very long time given the way things are going right now.
It is. Inflation's ramping up, and changing your portfolio based strictly on your age just makes no sense. There's just nothing that should be tied to your age and your investment portfolio. It's got to be driven by market data. It's got to be driven by what's going on currently and not the long-term historical averages that's built into that pie chart they're going to hand you from modern portfolio theory. And it can lead you in exactly the wrong direction. And that's exactly what's going on right now. If you're loading up on bonds because you passed age 65, you're reducing the return and increasing the risk of your portfolio, and no one does that on purpose. So it's just a matter of following an outdated rule that needs to be looked at again across the board.
In fact, one of the articles you found that we covered in the webinar was interesting, Perry, and that was the article from the Wall Street Journal on what it takes today compared to 20 years ago to generate a 7.5% return.
Sure.
And 20 years ago, you could do that in a 100% bond portfolio.
How about that? Imagine that. People can't even imagine those kinds of returns in the bond market today, 7.5%.
Well, part of that was the interest, and part of it was the fact that interest rates were still falling, which meant bonds appreciated in value. So you had both capital gain and your interest income. That's a winning combination. In today's market, with yields where they are, your bond allocation, if you're following this really screwy model, can't be more than 12%. You must take much more stock risk in order to generate anything close to 7.5% return. And that's a theoretical model.
Correct.
Because in reality, stock prices across the board, well, I'm not sure I want to say across the board, but certainly the stocks that most people are putting money into are quite speculative, and the price earning ratio is extended, to say the least. And according to Dr. Schiller, anytime we've been at these levels, the next 5-year return for stocks is low single digits. And yet the model people use says we'll earn 9-10% in stock market. Well, that doesn't happen every year.
9 and 10 in stocks, yeah, and 4 and 5 in on the bond portion, and it's like, nope, those returns just aren't out there. Like I said, we may be able to get close to that on the equity side, but the bond market's not going to be returning 4 or 5% returns anytime soon with rates this low. And now and rates increasing from the Fed. They're under a huge amount of pressure, and it's not going to happen. Those returns just can't be there. We cannot have continually falling interest rates anymore. We're kind of at the bottom right now.
And one of the things that we generally don't do, well, we pay attention, but we generally, being the investment population, retail investors, do not pay a lot of attention to overseas markets, and that can create problems. Now, we do not own any international stock exposure in our portfolios, in our client portfolios, or our 401k portfolios. Well, no, I don't remember buying any for this month. And that being overseas is part of the standard Kool-Aid mantra. You should be diversified and own stuff in foreign markets, developed markets, and international emerging markets, and maybe some frontier market exposure. And you say frontier, that was the Wild West, right? Well, it's the Wild West as far as the security business is concerned. But one of the things, if you haven't been paying attention to it, there's a company called Evergrande. Oh, boy, that's a wonderful name, isn't it?
Great story.
Evergrande. Yeah, well, it's a real estate developer. Remember what happened to real estate back in 07, 08, 09? Yeah, well, that's going on in China right now. Evergrande has been defaulting on its U.S. dollar-denominated bonds. The real estate housing business a lot of that's apartment condo stuff in China is collapsing, and it's causing huge problems in their junk bond business values. Investors, overseas investors who bought the stuff in China, they're starting to feel some pain, and there is what's called contagion risk. And a lot here in the United States, a lot of people have bought high yielding bonds, also known as junk, because the companies that are issuing the bonds are on the verge of bankruptcy. But fear not, they're paying all of 4%, and that's more than I can get at the local bank. Can't leave money in my checking account anymore because there's no return on it.
Ever. So, yeah, there's nothing there at all. And even like I said, Don, even the much higher risk junk bonds at 4%, short-term inflation rates are even higher than that. So you're still actually in a net loss there after inflation, even buying junk bonds. So that bond allocation just isn't working right now, and it's not going to work for a while. You really need to pay attention to that. We are up against our first break here. Time for us to get out of here for a second. I'd like to remind everyone that we have our next monthly market update on the calendar. It is Saturday, December 4th, 9 a.m. You can sign up for that at iriradio.com. Just go to iriradio.com, head to the webinar page, give the registration link a click, and you're going to get an email back. And then on December 4th, you just click that link and you will be live online with us, just like the group was this morning. And you'll be able to see the charts we're looking at and understand a little more about what it is we think is going on and how we're addressing that. It's been very valuable for people. It's well worth your time. Again, you can register for that at iriradio.com. If you'd like to talk to us this afternoon, give us a call here at 800-465-8770. It's 800-465-8770. Stay with us. We will be right back.
You got to know when to hold 'em, know when to fold 'em, know when to walk away.
Well, that's not only true for gamblers at the table, but it's true for stock investors, bond investors, and it's especially true for the Fed, and I think they forgot to fold them. They didn't walk away from the table. We mentioned that we're talking about the Fed here in this last segment, they have announced that they're thinking about beginning sometime next year. If it still continues on, then maybe they'll raise interest rates. It's not certain, which is the reason that the bond market had a healthy recovery this last week, especially the long bond marketplace. Those rates fell and bond values rose. And that's actually, if you're looking for a key signal about impending disaster, watch the 30-year bond rate, because right now those bond holders sighed a big, deep one of relief this week. The Fed says we are going to do something about inflation, and they can do something. They aren't doing anything yet, but they they're talking about
it. They said they're gonna. Yeah, we're thinking about it, like you said, but we'll see if they actually follow through. The Fed has had a bad habit lately of being able to
job
be scared out of their position. Yep, they'll talk and talk and talk and then not do anything if markets react badly to what they are proposing.
So the stock market does not dislike inflation in the early stages. It's when it starts compounding and getting out of control, and I think we're fairly close to that point, but not there yet. So we're fully invested in the market. We don't see there's no big alarm going off right now in any of our signals, any of the indicators that we watch. But should there be, the answer is yes. The Fed is only a year late in doing anything about the speculation that's gone on in the market. And there is a lot of speculation, a lot of really dumb stuff that's happened in the last 6 to 9 months. But the Fed, once we came out of recession and the market had recovered, instead of saying, well, we're in pretty good shape right now as far as the markets are concerned, we can take our foot off the gas at least a little bit. No, 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 no. We wouldn't want to do that. After all, what we've learned about the insider trading activity, we're making a lot of money here coming to work.
Let this thing roll. That's right.
That's right. I don't know if that's exactly how they made the decision, but they did have a conflict of interest. But they are going to slow down the support to the bond market. Not by very much. Which means happy days are here again. I should have used that for bump music.
They should be slowing down right now. They're still at emergency levels. They're still buying $120 billion a month in the bond market. And that's just there's nothing in the economy that says that kind of support is warranted. So they're even though they really don't want to, they're going to have to start tapering, as they put it.
And then the Fed's doing too little, too late. And when inflation gets high enough, they're going to have to slam on the brakes. And that's when we should expect to see the economy come rolling, not rolling over, dropping dead, and the stock market collapsing. And I would expect it's going to be bigger, certainly bigger than the 08, 09 market, and possibly even larger than the tech bubble bust. There's a number of things the Fed can do. It can control market speculation by stopping, not gradually working your way out of quantitative easing, but just stopping it. Some other central bankers, that's what they're doing. They're just stopping because inflation's getting out of control. They could raise interest rates. They could start doing it now. The market expects them to raise it to the outrageous rate of 1.5%.
What are we going to do? How do we go on at that rate?
And it wouldn't surprise me to see them have to push that up into the 4 or 5% very rapidly once they realize inflation's really out of control. There are some things they cannot do because it's too late. And one of which is they have no impact over energy. There's nothing they can do about labor. And with inflation running the way it is, labor is getting pay raises. They're getting bonuses. And the bonuses, they don't repeat. But once you raise the base wage for a given job, it doesn't get rolled back. John Deere Company, make the tractors and the lawnmowers and all sorts of other stuff. I mean, they're in their third week of a labor union strike. They offered a 30% pay raise over a couple of years, plus $8,500 cash bonus to come back to work. And the UAW said, you gotta be kidding
me. Not nearly good enough. And those are the kinds of things that create systemic inflation that just continue rolling along through the economy. That's what the Fed has a hard time battling, and it's something that they will be forced to address, and they're really hoping it doesn't come to that, because the last thing they want to do is make any large unannounced interest rate increases. But the inflation numbers just keep coming in a little hotter than even the Fed was hoping for, and all the wage increases are like you said, Don, those are really tough to roll back and take back out of the economy.
one of the central bankers who is fairly tightly tied to Fed policy is the European Central Bank, where Christine Lagarde is its president. And negative interest rates between banks has been dominant ever since the 08-09 great financial crisis, GFC. But recently, along with Japan, which is amazing that they are raising interest rates and stopping their quantitative easing from 1989.
They've been at it a long time. That's right.
The French, the Irish, the Dutch, and the Swiss have all abandoned negative interest rates, hiking their key regional banks. The German 10-year bond is still a little below zero. But as rates rise, the value of your bond falls. You got to keep that in mind. You think, oh, a higher interest rate, that means I get more for my money. Yes, but if you already own the bonds, they're worthless. Not worthless. You can't get anything for them, but they are worth less than they were before the rate adjustment upward.
Correct. Yeah.
So it basically, there's been a real shrinkage of negative negative rates around the world. It affects trillions of dollars of portfolio.
And that's a good thing. Yeah, the negative rates have largely done nothing. And they were just representing, you know, a huge amount of weakness, and people were still out there, you know, buying a pool of debt that pays you back less than you put in it from having a negative rate. And finally, it's like, no, we got to normalize that, get those things off the books, and at least get back to the positive side of bond rates. And that's going to turn out to be a positive thing. But anytime there's that kind of transition, it's always disruptive, and you never know exactly how smoothly that's going to go.
And one of the areas that's disruptive is in the standard modern portfolio theory, portfolio structure, because of the reliance on bonds, one, to make money, which they don't in a rising rate market, and two, to moderate risk, which they don't in a rising rate market. They add to risk, and yet the bulk of investor portfolios are structured to lose money in a rising rate market. What do you do about it? Well, one of the things you can do is take another view of how to deal with market risk. A 60-40 portfolio doesn't manage risk. It theoretically gives you some structure, but it doesn't deal with the current market environment. You just need to live long enough. If you want to know how to deal with risk, give us, probably tomorrow we'll have the replay link from today.
Right.
And we talk about the difference. We spoke about the difference between active management and risk management. And risk management means that you're paying attention to what's causing you to lose value in your portfolio. Back to Warren Buffett. Rule one, don't lose money. Rule two, remember rule one. And there've been processes to do that for a century. It's just that modern portfolio theory abandoned proven processes to grow wealth. Modern portfolio theory doesn't let you compound wealth. It lets you accumulate it, particularly if you're adding to your portfolio, that you're saving money, but you're not compounding wealth. You must have risk management, active risk management, and we have never had a portfolio brought into us for review that has an active risk management policy in it. And they all pretty much look the same because they're coming out of the financial advisor community where it's just drink the Kool-Aid.
That's it. Everybody does MPT. Everybody's cooking out of the same cookbook. And everybody's portfolio looks the same, which means in a big down market, you lose money, and you're going to spend years making it up, and that's why it doesn't work as well. It's much more important to not ride that market down than it is to beat, say, the S&P 500, you know, every month or every year. That's way less important than not taking the big losses that you're going to get with that pie chart portfolio, because there's no defense built in there other than time. You know, like you said, Don, just wait and wait indefinitely for it to come back. And that's just really not good enough for people, especially anybody in retirement already. You don't have 25 years to wait for your portfolio to come back. You're in retirement now. And that's why we think that's a much riskier proposition than the way we do approach that. We are here at the bottom of the hour. If you'd like to see how we approach that, the best way to do that is to attend our next webinar, December 4th, 9 a.m. on a Saturday morning. You can register for that at iriradio.com. That's iriradio.com. And if you're not getting our Week in Review, which is our weekly email newsletter, just send an email to help@iriradio.com. Put Week in Review in the subject line. We just need your first and last name, and you will begin receiving that on Monday. If you'd like to talk to us this afternoon, we have plenty of time. Be happy to talk to you about your portfolio or the markets in general. 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. You are listening to Investor Resources here on AM 770 KTTH. Stay with us. We will be right back.
Detour. There's a muddy road ahead. Detour.
Yeah, that muddy road looks like it's going to be more and more inflation. Recently, the U.S. inflation rate reached a 13-year high, triggering a debate about whether or not we are entering an inflationary period similar to the 70s. So far, it does not look like that. The demographic issues are materially different. It's a different economy, which brings up our old mantra that the problem with modern portfolio theory is it doesn't care that it's a new economy. It's the same old as far as long-term averages are concerned. There's nothing new under the sun. That was Solomon, I think. But I wasn't around when he said that, but read it.
Yeah, there you go. That makes no sense in your portfolio. If someone is building your portfolio with a bunch of information that's 80 years old, that cannot be healthy when things are changing so rapidly today. And that's why we say there's no safety in that pie chart portfolio except an unlimited amount of time that hopefully will trend upwards over long stretches of time. In the meantime, your capital is at risk, and the people that handed you that pie chart aren't going to do anything about it. That's how that process works.
So part of what is a pretty good indicator of inflation is delivery times. When it takes a long time to get normal stuff, and we've recently been through that with appliances, with construction material, because we've been doing some updating on the house for the last 5 months that we had no idea would take that long. And in fact, we get to celebrate. I think I get to take the send the storage pod in my driveway back to the company this week. It'll be the first time in months that garage bay will be open. But be that as it may, when longer delivery times are a pretty reliable predictor that inflation is heating up, but it's also a positive indicator that demand in the economy is robust. And our economy is dependent upon consumers. Go shopping, go shopping, go shopping. That keeps things running. And it also makes you very aware that there are not enough people in the store or the restaurant or any place else you go to give you quick service. They are short workers.
Everywhere.
People.
Yeah,
it seems like everywhere you go.
Yep.
So that's not breaking news, but it is... the fact that the demand is out there is positive, and because of government's largesse last year and consumers, households that got the money, did something Congress was not expecting. They behaved responsibly.
How about that?
If only Congress would take a cue.
Yeah, just take a hint. But people took a lot of that money. They paid down some debt. They saved money. They put it in the bank. So now people are sitting on cash. The pandemic is hopefully going to continue to wind down here, and people are out trying to buy stuff again, and it's just difficult to get it right now. Like you said, Don, part of it is it's not being produced enough, and part of it is the stuff that is produced can't get delivered to the stores in time. So it's really tough, and that's part of the bottleneck driving up inflation.
Well, one thing we never expected was to see consumers sitting on over $2 trillion of excess savings
right.
that they've accumulated since the pandemic shutdown. I mean,
that's a ton of dough. Yeah,
it's a lot of money. And some of them, particularly if they're not working, are going to be perhaps a little more concerned about whether they spend it right away or not. You know, sooner or later, if you're living on your savings, most of the time it runs out and you need a way to replace that. But right now, as long as people continue to spend money, then businesses can prosper if the government stays out of their way. They do. And that's something I heard on, we heard on this last news just before our show started, that the federal court has put a stay on the administration's mandate, vaccine mandate that goes into effect in January. We're going to take a look at it. There's a whole bunch of states that have sued the federal government saying, "You're killing us, buddy. Hey, man. Hey, man. You're killing us. You know, we have to let people work and let people make reasonable decisions about their own welfare." We'll see how that one turns out.
That goes. Yep.
Yeah. But the inflation that we see is not not going to go away anytime soon. And one of the things that does bring to the forefront is that the normal inflation hedges that people have used historically when thinking of precious metals have not been working well. That's one of the things about the markets are dynamic. Things change. And we mentioned, I think, last week that the normal correlation that people have between gold and inflation is only true once in a while. It's not consistent over long periods of time.
Correct.
No
yeah.
matter, people have a belief and they invest on the belief rather than the data. Unlike our processes, it's the data that's right in front of us. We look at it every day. We don't trade every day, but we look at the data. We want to know what changes are in the mix that we should be prepared to deal with if they continue to accelerate.
And those are always market decisions. Those are the market-driven data. You know, like you said, now we're not against bonds. We're just against bonds when they're not making money. We've had bonds in our portfolio. We've had gold in our portfolio, just not right now. It's not doing well, so there's no reason to own it and keep it forever just because you like the idea. The idea doesn't matter. Is it helping you make progress towards your financial goal or not? And if it's the answer is no, then it shouldn't be in your portfolio. And all that means is maybe later, you know, maybe the time's coming around where it's going to be good again and we'll buy it again.
So the issue that we're really dealing with is the speculation that is going on in the market right now. And there is a ton of it. We know that we have inflation because it's coming out in the company headlines. Commodities are higher. And when I talk about commodities, I don't mean just gold and silver. I'm talking about energy costs are higher, food costs are higher. When we import a lot of food for our country, I buy oranges. I look at this little sticker with the barcode on it. It says product of Chile. Okay. Did you know Chile was a major exporter of oranges and they're right here in your local grocery store?
I just know it can't be very inexpensive to get that orange here from Chile. So that's a long piece of supply chain right there.
So Coca-Cola says they're going to have to raise prices to offset higher commodity costs. There you go right there at Coca-Cola. So sugar. Kimberly Clark is raising prices on Scott toilet paper and diapers in both the U.S. and Canada. Here's the ones going to hit hard. Oreo cookies, Ritz crackers, and the Sour Patch Kids are all going to cost more next year. Disneyland has raised ticket prices and, on the busiest day, has added a new, more expensive priority tier. So if you really want to get in the front of the line, just dole out some more dollars.
Pony up that cash. Yep, yep.
McDonald's is raising menu prices because wages are rising. I mean, I go by several fast food places and there's a big sign out front stuck in the ground and says, "We pay $15. I assume that's for showing up to work, but I didn't ask if I could.
Just get it at the drive-thru window. I'd like my $15,
right.
please.
That's right. And then Tesla is raising prices on 4 of its electric vehicles. So these prices are going to be, they're going to be around a while. And in the market, you have things, you have cryptocurrencies that are jokes. I mean, there's nothing behind them, and people are buying them. We would call that speculative.
Oh, completely. That's the deep end of the speculative pool. In fact, the new cryptocurrencies, because there are a lot of them, and people are actually buying them. It's amazing.
I could go through a list of things that say the market makes no sense. it doesn't matter as long as the money keeps piling into the market. It matters when the money quits piling into the market. And do you have a plan for the next bear market? And I'll bet you don't.
Not if you have that pie chart. Not if your advisor gave you a risk return questionnaire and you ended up in a balanced portfolio, which is where almost everyone ends up. There is no plan there to protect your money in a bear market. When the bottom drops out the next time, which we know it will, we just don't know when it's going to happen. They're not going to make a move to protect your capital. And that's why it's so dangerous. That's not the way we look at it. We're going to stay fully invested in the market as long as we can find some positive returns out there. But when we can't, then we change what we're doing and we modify the portfolios to reflect that. And that's what you don't get with that pie chart.
So I'm thinking of the speculation that's in the market. People are doing irrational things. Some of our grandkids were over this weekend and yesterday. So that wasn't the weekend. It was Friday. And one of them is telling me about they're buying cryptocurrencies.
Oh, yeah.
And I listened and I made some grandfatherly cautionary comments not to throw a bucket of water on the kid. At least he's interested in investing and some money and doing something with it. But I cautioned him on that. But you look at these non-fungible tokens, you say, what on earth is that?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, somebody created a non-fungible token for an invisible statue. And somebody bought it.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, that's not a sign of speculation and irrationality, is it? No.
That makes perfect sense. We always like to buy things that don't actually exist and be able to certify that you own that item. And then hopefully somebody else, you're hoping someone will pay more for it later. That's the only reason it's going to ever do you any good.
There's another sports guy, and I don't remember his name. He is actually filed with the Securities Exchange Department, tennis shoes of famous players, and sells them. You can buy a portion. I don't know where the tennis shoes are kept, but he has securitized tennis shoes of sports stars.
Wow.
And they're selling for millions of dollars. It made me think of pet rocks, except could take the pet rock home. And what were the little, the something babies, the little dolls which was a fad. And then when everybody had one and they said, what am I going to do with all, where am I going to put all these things? All of a sudden they were worthless.
They increase in value significantly until they don't. And when a market like that, which is actually based on nothing, when it turns around, it just vaporizes. And that's what happens with non-fungible tokens or Beanie Babies or anything else in that line, which is a lot of the new cryptocurrencies out there. They're just as speculative and they may be going nowhere and you can get left holding the bag. So it's always, it's always buyer beware. And that's not a place for serious money. That's a place for Vegas money. There's nothing else there for it.
Well, even there is a new exchange traded fund for I don't know if it's Bitcoin, but it is cryptocurrency. But it doesn't own any cryptocurrencies.
Right, it's futures.
It's all derivatives. It's all just futures trying to bet on the future price of something. But there's really nothing behind it. And when futures markets, they use leverage. When they go upside down, man, they go upside down really quickly. But that's not a sign of irrational investing in the marketplace that the Fed should be worried about.
Ugh.
No, not today.
Somebody should. We are up against our last break of the day here, Don. We'll get out of here for a second. I'd like to remind everyone, we do have our next market update scheduled for Saturday, December 4th. You can register for that at IRIradio.com. If you have questions for us this afternoon, there's plenty of time to get your question on the board. Give us a call, 800-465-8770. That is 800-465-8770. Stay with us. We will be right back.
The minute you walked in the joint, I could see you were a man of distinction, a real big spender.
Well, our president falls in that category. He at least got his bill, one of his bills, passed in the House of Representatives. It has not made it through the Senate yet, so we don't know how big a spender is going to be. It's a little smaller, about half the size of what he wanted, but guarantee that there will be more following if they get this one done. But I'm going back to this last segment. We're talking about the speculation that's in the market. One of the signs of the speculative nature has been the ease with which investors in a handful of stocks have decided that they are skilled investors because they are outperforming the market, being the S&P usually. This was something that was happening in the late 90s leading up to the tech bubble. People were buying Qualcomm and a whole bunch of other big tech stocks at the time. Microsoft was in the batch. And they been, man, the moves were big.
And you couldn't go wrong. You couldn't make a mistake.
Why would I buy a mutual fund or buy, you know, why worry about diversification? Tech is the future. And after all, the stores, brick and mortar, they're gonna go out of business. Everything's gonna be on the web. Heard about pets.com? How about grocery.com? I mean, all sorts. If it was .com, people were buying them until they all basically collapsed because there was nothing behind them. And that same kind of attitude, that atmosphere has been present. The S&P 500 and the NASDAQ 100 have been hitting a lot of new highs over the past year.
Right. Yeah.
Not because the market as a broad collection of over 5,000 individual companies that publicly trade have been doing well, but because of six stocks have had a lot of investor interest in them. Apple's one of them. Up until recently, Facebook was. It's had a little problem.
They're kind of self-destructing a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, they've got some problems. But that begs the question of, are you a skillful investor or are you just lucky because of the current circumstances? The real question is, what is your process that got you into the stock, and what is your process that will cause you to exit, to sell the stock before you go through a 50, 60, 70, 80, 90% drop in value?
And your process better not be, watching the headlines, watching the news feed come across, because anything that shows up in the news is already reflected in the stock price. So you're too late at that point. You have to be tracking data prior to that, or you're in big trouble. And people do forget the amount of risk they're taking because they're making money at any given time. And right away you begin to think, you know what, this isn't that hard. I'm pretty good at this. And bottom line is you're not. And they never confuse brains with a bull market. And that's what happens when everything's going up. People are like, okay, this is not that hard. I don't know why I would ever pay anybody for investment advice. I can do this myself. And then when the bottom drops out, that's just deer in the headlights, and they don't know what direction to go in.
So one of the tests is, can you pick 10 stocks that will lose money?
That's a good one.
Now, why would you do that? Well, that's probably a better test of your skill rather than luck. Intentionally finding some, I'm not telling you need to go buy them. You have a process where you can identify the losers? So in our portfolios, we talk about this frequently on the radio and certainly in our webinars, own leaders and get rid of laggards. Why do you own stuff that's not working? Well, you shouldn't. However, if you're going to be broadly diversified, everybody should own a good USA company that's not doing well. But why are you committing part of your portfolio to something that is losing you money? Do you have a process that identifies when the upward channel has come to an end? And are you, even if you've made a lot of money in the stock, are you willing to capture that money and bank it? Or are you going to sit by and watch it erode because the sellers have been piling on and you just believe in the future?
And that's when it's so important to have a process. You have to have a standardized way to look at the market that allows you to see this is weakening or it's strengthening more. You know, maybe it's time to double up, put some more money in that, because whatever it is, it just continues to get stronger. But it's got to be something more than, well, it sure seems right. And it worked last year, so I'm going to do it again this year. Those are very dangerous things that can really get expensive very quickly because of the speed with which the market moves today.
Yeah, so taking credit for a positive outcome can lead to overconfidence, especially if the outcome contained an element of chance, which is in the market. I mean, we tell all our clients repeatedly, we're going to have bad trades. We're going to buy things that don't work, but we're not going to hang on to them. If they aren't working, they will not last long in a portfolio. So we're back to what's your process. The better your process, the more disciplined you are about implementing rules about how your portfolio works, how you're going to make decisions, and then doing them, regular review and pulling the plug even when your gut says, boy, I don't like doing this.
This doesn't look good at all. And that's many individual investors' biggest downfall, is that even if they see something and it starts to feel like they should probably make a change, they don't actually do it. And that's the critical part. You have to act on that information when you see it. And that's one of the primary things we get paid for.
Well, and I've done that. I mean, we turn around and look at some of the things that we've sold recently, and I'm saying, you know, maybe I shouldn't be selling this, but it's not working right now, and we have a really nice profit. Now, if we don't take it, then we're not compounding returns. You can't compound returns by letting them disappear into the Ethernet, wherever it happens to be.
That's absolutely correct. Yep, you've got to be able to book them. You got to be willing to sell high, and then you can buy low again, but you've got to do that selling first.
You know, and that was the major difference in getting through last year, was that we saw what we owned deteriorating as early as January. It was forcing changes in the portfolios. And by the time we got to March, when the market was collapsing, we were already out of the market. And then April came around, things were turning around, and that forced us to make a decision, even though the previous 6 weeks was a gut wrencher. And we were forced back into the market because the data said you can't hold cash when it's not at the top of the list. When cash is at the bottom of the list or working its way down, you have to own the stuff that's at the top. There's a rule to follow. Now, how often you look at it, how often you make the evaluation, that's what I'm going to do. That's a function of your personal policy.
You've got to build that rule set out. That's right.
Yeah, we have different policies for different portfolios, but there's the rule. If cash is at the top of the list and everything else is losing money, why do you still hang on to those things that are losing money? That's a good question for your financial
Everybody
advisor.
Everybody should ask their advisor that. That's right. Why do we own the things that aren't making a profit? And just wait for the answer. See what they have to say about that.
The odds are you just need to hang on. Yeah, everybody needs to own a good American company, even if it's losing money. Because it won't go out of business. Certainly not.
Right?
Well, right, yeah. There are a few that have, and to the chagrin of many advisors, but be that as it may. We're getting really close to the end of our show here. If you do not get our week in review, you send us an email, help@iriradio.com. We need your first and last name in the body of the email. We'll have your email address, and we will put you on the distribution list. You'll start receiving that. We send out at least one a week. Sometimes we have an extra issue that we send out midweek. but at least you will be on it. If you would like a free analysis of your portfolio from our perspective, you send us an email, help@iriradio.com. You can call us during the week at 800-317-9119. That's 800-317-9119. We'll be glad to talk with you and answer your questions and discuss how we can do an online review of your portfolio. Lord willing, we will be back next week. God bless you, your family, and the United States of America.